I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a heart. When you plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a bit. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs. You can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side. Put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Tomato seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden be much better, and I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Homegrown tomatoes, what'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Ladies and gentlemen, great to have you joining us here. It's time for In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski, joining us by phone, and we're able to take your calls today about gardening. You can put your questions about your garden to Master Gardener Ed Bajarski by dialing in 772-3808. And we want to say thank you to The Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. They are vending bouquets of fresh cut, locally grown flowers at the market this Saturday from 10 till 1 p.m. And they also have baskets of blooming hydrangea, geranium, and begonia available at The Flower Farm at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. So, hopefully we've got Ed on the phone here. Are we coming through with the signal there, Ed?
I hear you clearly.
All right, excellent. Well, we've had a little bit of rain in the forecast lately, and it's 1st of August. How are things going up in your garden?
Well, I finished harvesting the last of my garlic last Sunday noon. So 2,000 bulbs out of the ground, and it seems like into every greenhouse and garage and furnace room, they are curing and dying. So bottom line is, everybody, it's time to your garden. Dig your garlic.
So the garlic is curing now. The rain that has come. Did you get the garlic out before it got too soggy?
Oh, before, during, and after. So it did not get too soggy. Yes, I was watching. I mean, there were a couple days I was out there sitting on the bucket with my greenhouse, or excuse me, sitting on the bucket, my rain gear, and inside and outside the greenhouse, and cleaning garlic. I pulled good. Garlic crop ever, big and beautiful, and so now I am preparing the new box for the new crop to go in later on this fall.
All right, and what kind of preparations do you do for the boxes for the next garlic crop? How are you going to make it ready?
As always, there's half a dozen experiments going on now. Several of them, of course, I'm checking my records to see which boxes have been out of garlic for at least 2 full years, so I'm, you know, rotating my crop. But I also built 7 new boxes. So those, three of them are planted with potatoes and cabbage and broccoli, so that will be harvested before the garlic is planted. And the other 4 boxes, there's 2 of them have had fertilizer and my mixture of horse manure soil in them, and they have some coffee grounds on top, and they are growing cover crops. two more boxes have fish scraps buried in them with coffee grounds on top of the fish to serve as scent camouflage, as it were. And then again, my mixture of horse manure and soil, and they all also have wood ashes and rock mixed in too.
Wood ashes and what now? Kind of missed the last thing.
Rock phosphate.
Oh. So
it's a phosphorus source, an organic, considered organic phosphorus source, which is best applied with other organic matter so the soil microorganisms can break it down, excuse me, to make it more available to the garlic crop. For the once it's planted in the fall and the roots start to grow, and those are covered up. Oh, that's right. I also these are going to be really rich stuff. Mm. I also mixed in buckets of spent brewer's grain into those last 2 boxes.
Ooh, spent
so
brewer's
grain. It's going to be cooking.
Wow, that's exciting. That sounds like some fertile soil there.
That's really what it's all about. I mean, I've had lots of folks call me, is it time to harvest my garlic? Or come over and look at it, what do you think? And again, I've asked them when I see their garlic, and it's kind of wimpy looking, and I think, well, what have you fertilized? And they say, well, we threw a little compost in there. And I say, no, and then they're also spaced a bit too close together. So all of that results in pretty small garlic. I like to grow big garlic.
So that's a big takeaway, is that garlic is a quite heavy feeder, like a very heavy feeder.
Yes, and it really benefits by that. I mean, I could, as far as other crops that might go into the same type of fertile soil, you know, for next year, the cabbage family would be good on that. Corn be good on that. I'm anxiously waiting. My corn has silks on it and is shedding pollen, so I'm helping to pollinate and anticipating anxiously for sometime maybe 2 or 3 weeks from now for fresh sweet corn.
Wow, cool. Yeah, what's is that the typical kind of fruiting time for corn once it's pollinating?
That's about right. Yeah, you know, but 2 to 3 weeks should be good. And what I'm actually going to do, although it's kind of hard to reach because the these corn stalks are all that the pollen-bearing anthers up there on top of the tassel are 6 feet plus, so it's even hard to reach. I haven't grown corn this fall before, and I'm sorry, but I can't recall the name of it, but it's one I bought, you know, on one of the, an early variety that I bought on the local seed. So it's a burpee-ease, I forget. So anyway, they've grown extremely well.
Wow.
And so usually I would try to catch, tap the tassels so that some pollen falls onto a piece of paper or cardboard. And then I will kind of shake the pollen directly onto the silks, which is the equivalent of the female part, which then the pollen grows on silks, and then each individual silk is attached to individual kernel. So the better they're pollinated, the more kernels I will get.
Oh. Wow. Okay. That's cool. I never really put it all together like that.
I'm also helping on the hand pollination where normally you would have a big, well, down south, you would have a big patch of corn. Corn is wind pollinated.
Mm.
The wind just takes the pollen and away it goes. Hopefully it falls on the silks along the way. Well, with a big patch, then that means the edges might not be so well pollinated, but the middle should feet. Well, I've only got two rows 16 feet long, so that's a small patch as corn goes. I hopefully next year will grow more if things go well. So I'm helping the pollination, helping out Mother Nature.
Nice. Well, sometimes she could use some help.
If, yeah, I mean, we are, face it, we are pushing the envelope growing sweet corn here. So
yeah. That's a bold move, but I look forward to hearing in a few weeks about how good it tastes.
I certainly hope I can tell you that, yeah. Well, it's been an incredibly busy few weeks of berry picking and freezing and making juice and other stuff. It's the most spectacular year for fruits and berries ever that I've ever seen in Southeast Alaska.
Right. We so rarely get back-to-back scorchers during the summer, and so that's just kind of what's happening, right?
Right. Certainly I'm not a big fan of salmon berries, but there were plenty of those early, and the blueberries have been great, and the huckleberries we're harvesting now, gallons of all of those. Cherries are just about done here. We did have rain kind of at a bad time. The cherries were ripening, but then we had more cherries that weren't during the rain that have finished ripening now. I am tired of, and quite tired of pitting cherries.
Sure. So did you manage to avoid that hazard with cherries where they burst after a big rain?
Oh, some definitely did. And I picked the last, no more cherries, but anyway, I picked the last of what I'm going to pick yesterday.
Yep.
And so, yeah, there were some that had cracked and gotten moldy. So, I mean, those got pitched off, but luckily, like I said, some of them did ripen well. And we've been making juice mixtures for quite a while now. Raspberries, we picked 9 gallons of raspberries in the last 10 days. And so we made raspberry cherry juice. We've made, last night we made a 5-plate juice with cherries, raspberries, red currants, gooseberries, and the last of our Saskatoons. Really great stuff.
Wow.
beautiful juice, and I have a copper, so I got from my father, and with hot juice, we put that into hot, clean beer bottles, and put a cap on it, and seal the cap on, label them. That works great for keeping, and then we just open a bottle and mix it with apple juice or other adult beverages, whatever it suits you, or mix it in. It can be used in marinades too, of course. That same juice can be used to make a jelly at a later date, if need be. I know lots of folks are making jams and jellies. And the same juice could be frozen into plastic containers, or you could put it into jars, lids, and do a water bath deal of those also.
Right.
Save for long term.
Nice.
And of course, pies. I mean, my wife made an incredible fresh raspberry pie a couple nights ago. Really, really wonderful stuff.
This is a delicious time of year.
There's folks who I know are making wine with some of the different fruit juices.
Oh, yeah.
And others who are setting up their kombucha with different kinds of fruit juices, too.
Definitely.
There's lots of places to use it, to use the fruits. Certainly just keeping, you can just freeze the fruits as is for use also for your processing. You got more time in the winter because it's a busy time of year. So, later on when things quiet down, they can make jams and jellies and other stuff then too.
Yeah.
And even if you're just freezing big bulk containers of the berries, you can squeeze the juice out of the thawed berries really easily too.
So that's
making it easier for ourselves later. And my freezers are getting pretty full.
I bet. Well, okay, so harvesting berries has obviously been a huge part of the last couple of weeks, and really for the next little while for folks as the time is ripe.
Yeah, I've got blackberries, which are going to be, they're probably 2 weeks away, but the apple crop, again, is really high, really big apple crop this year, and they are already at the stage of being usable for pies. I mean, this is, we're 2 to 3 weeks early on that.
Wow.
So these young apples, which still part like Yellow Transparence and Hodai, I get a lot of this year, they are looking really good. They've got tartness and some flavor. And the nice thing is that you can, you know, with whatever sort of pie crust you have, you can just slice these apples. You don't have to peel them because the the peels are very tender. Mix in your favorite spices, cinnamon, nutmeg, sugar, assorted stuff with them. And, you know, better get the ice cream or whipped cream or whatever else you need to go with them.
That sounds so good.
And, of course, that's another one where you can make the raw pies, you know, in, get all filled up, and freeze, you know, put them in, you know, vacuum seal the pies, and uncooked. And so that way, then, you can into the freezer, and then later on, again, in the winter, you know, fall, winter, spring, then you can pop a pie out of the freezer, directly put it out of the bag into the oven, and it takes... oh, maybe an hour and a half or 45 minutes to bake the pie from being frozen.
Whoa, that's a game changer right there. When you're harvesting your apples, you're already in the mode, you're already processing. Just make a bunch of uncooked apple pies with your harvest and vacuum pack them and freeze them, and boom, you have a winter freezer pie. Oh my goodness.
We had one day last year at the end of August when my daughter was visiting. We picked about 3/4 of a bucket of apples and made pies. Oh, it seemed like all day. We made 11 pies that day. My wife wife was making the crust. Let's see. I was slicing apples. My daughter was rolling out pie crust. It was assembly line fashion.
That's
and then, of course, we baked one to make sure for quality control purposes.
Sure. Yeah, that's necessary. Well, that is fun. Harvest season is awesome. Oh, that's good stuff. Okay, so people have perhaps harvested their garlic and they've got it set up to cure. Well, I'm still thinking back about garlic like I always do. If there's anybody out there curing their first crop of garlic, what are a couple of just little key points for them to think about?
Okay. Sure. The you know, gently harvest, and don't, what you do when you pull the garlic out of the soil, it's a temptation to whack a couple of them against each other to knock the soil off. Don't do that. Don't whack it against a shovel or against the box. You know, knock it against the palm of your hand or shake it off gently first. You don't want to bruise the garlic. Then from there, I'll take that garlic, set it aside usually for an hour or two while I'm digging more, and then I start peeling off some of the outer leaves. And the idea here is what we want to end up with is about 4, in my case, still green leaves left on the stem. So you're peeling off the lower ones below that, and the reason why is so that you leave a couple of skins. In this case, they're usually white skin. Once you peel the outer stuff off, it's kind of maybe reddish or pinkish, depending on variety. But usually when you peel it off, it turns down to white. Eventually, that turns color again. It'll turn back to usually a red or pink color. But if you want to leave those 4 leaves still on the stem, that tells you that you have enough skins to keep those cloves slowly drying, curing, but not drying out too much so that they shrivel up in storage in your house, in your garage, wherever you're keeping it for the winter. Well, fall, winter, depending on what garlic you have. So temperatures for the curing process, and I do, some folks, they don't have it in the light and other. I have garlic in my furnace room. I have garlic hanging in my garage over the wood stove with a fan going on. I have garlic stacked up, I think it's 7 or 8 racks high in my big greenhouse. It is exposed to the light there, and it's rotting nicely. And then in my small greenhouse, there's bunches and trays full of garlic. And again, I've got a fan moving the air to help dry it all out. And as I watch the garlic dry, you know, it starts out very green. The leaves are very green. Gradually they turn yellow. The roots are still on there. The roots are shriveling up too. And after about 2 weeks, I was just checking some of it this morning that I dug 2 weeks ago, it's just about ready now to have the clip off most of the roots and shorten the stem down to maybe 3 to 4 inches long. And then more drying will occur out of that stem. And in fact, if you hold it upside down, very often you can have, it's like garlic juice dripping out of stems that you could, I suppose, potentially catch and use in your, I don't know, maybe in your fruity drinks or whatever you want.
Hmm.
Or maybe add that to kombucha for a different flavor. Get creative with that garlic juice.
Uh-huh. Wow. I'm sure that is very, very, very flavorful, like almost syrup. So you want that to be drying?
It drips more like water, initially at least. Mm-hmm. And, you know, different varieties, depending on how much they've cured, will have more of that. So if you cut them if you make that of the stem, take the leaves off them when they're still greener, you know, more of the liquid will come up. There's more water there that hasn't evaporated out through the roots or whatever. But we want to get rid of that. And we're toughening up the skins around the bulb in the process too, so that again they will store better.
Mm. Yeah. So the key, even though that's like, you know, I'm sure flavorful stuff, is to get them dry so that you can enjoy it all winter long.
Yes, and it really affects the flavor too. So the freshly dug garlic is, particularly if you're eating it raw, you know, fresh dug versus cured garlic, or if you're cooking with it or sauteing with it, it really is initially kind of harsh, rather green. I mean, plenty of flavor there, but it mellows. It gets better, moderate flavor, not quite so much of a bite as it cures and for the storage for later. Mm-hmm. So it really does improve considerably with the proper curing.
That is a good point. You know, and I guess I never quite conceptualized it, but sure enough, those leaves go all the way down and wrap the bulb, basically as the skins around the bulb. Those are parts of the leaves.
Yes, they are the leaf bases.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, you start pulling down on a leaf, and it will peel all the way down to the base of the bulb. And so, back in May or June, you know, there wasn't much of any pulling to speak of from that clove. But as the leaves produce food, then the bulb, the bases of the leaves, essentially, expand to store garlic, to become the garlic cloves and store carbohydrates in them, and sugars, starches, and the other assorted spicy notes that we come to know and love.
Mm. Oof, that's good stuff.
I know. It's hard. There's times when it's hard for me. You know, I go out to the farm with garlic, and it's hard to think, God, I've got to sell some of these. Make some money to pay for this. You know, it's like selling my babies. But still, you know, some of them will go, and I've got to keep a certain percentage of them, the nice, big, beautiful ones, for the replanting then later on this fall. So that's the hard thing to realize. You need to save maybe between a quarter and a sixth of the crop for the replanting.
Hmm. Well, you raise them right, you know. You care about them. You put a lot of love into those creations and send some out into the world and keep some around the house.
Hopefully somebody else will benefit by them, you know, for eating or for growing more. You know, more people growing more garlic is a good thing. I've got a friend of ours. He's going to get into it in a big way. I hope he's successful. I'll be helping him this fall. But he's going to try to grow 10,000 cloves this fall. So,
cool.
Pretty big patch of garlic it's going to be.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you know, I mean, you can't really beat the garlic that can be produced up here. There's just something pretty perfect about the way the season and the cool ground over winter. You know, this, is it hardneck or longneck?
Yes, we are going hardneck, and he's going to be, the two varieties he's going to primarily grow, I have to try to talk him into a couple other just experiments, is Music, which is a porcelain hue, usually 4 or 5 big white cloves, and Chestnut Red, which is another, let's see, that's a purple strip type of garlic. It's got a few more cloves per bulb. Again, good flavor, but a different type of garlic. Looks differently, tastes. So, and we'll see which one does what. Which one does well or bad.
Oh, that's exciting.
I'm going to try to get my own numbers down to only 10 varieties this year. That's my goal. I have to drop 3 or 4. Try to simplify my life just a little bit.
Yeah. Sometimes less is more.
Yeah, less paperwork, especially. Right.
Well, that's true, I suppose, right? When you're treating the garden a little bit like a sort of a developmental laboratory and trying out new varieties and charting their progress, that only works if you keep careful notes throughout the whole season and across a couple of seasons. And before you know it, you've got notebooks and, you know, yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Well, I've got some of my old garden calendars dating back to the 80s when I lived in Petersburg and kept track of those things. And certainly just comparing this year to last year, that 2 to 3 weeks of difference in harvesting a whole lot of stuff from the garlic and the berries that are earlier, the cucumbers and the tomatoes are earlier, all sorts of things that have been ahead of schedule. So looking really good. This dry weather we're having now, we've got several inches of rain when we needed it badly, but that rain, the ground is still and so could soak up a lot more rain.
Oh, yeah.
The creek has not risen much. The ground is not very wet,
right,
at least in our neighborhood.
Yeah, same around here. We could definitely use more rain, you know, and now that folks out there listening are in the midst of harvesting their garlic, you know, the rain has our full permission to arrive for a little while here.
Yeah, I mean, mostly at night would be fine.
That would be even better, yeah. Okay, well, I might put it out there to callers. Anybody out there listening who wants to take advantage of having you on the phone here and ask a question about their garden, they're certainly welcome to. The number is 772-3808. Be happy to put them on with you, and while they think about their question, if they're out there and something pressing on their mind. So what's coming up next for you this next week in your own garden? What's on your to-do list here?
So in harvesting mode, we're harvesting about the third or fourth crop of lettuce already. The third crop of peas, I'll be harvesting some of those tomorrow. I planted another batch, the peas. I literally harvested garlic and out of one box, refertilized. The next day, there's, I think, 65 small lettuce in a 4x12 box. And in the box next to it, I put 2 more rows of peas, some cilantro and some broccoli and red mustard to try. And so last year, I did the same stuff. The peas were not planted weeks later. I'm hoping with the weather and all that I'll get a fourth crop of peas. They grew, they were flowering in October, did not set peas. So we'll see. And I mean, so yeah, lettuce, you know, yeah, the lettuce that we're harvesting from crop number 4 and working on, I planted crop number 5. And certainly I need to plant some kale. It's time for that. Planting radishes would be good right now. Mitch could be planted right now. So the ground isn't staying bare.
Right.
I'm get the garlic out, planting cover crops or planting, and I'm using this coffee grounds. One of the coffee places in town has lots. And after a little research, I mean, the price is great, haul it away for free. So coffee grounds are good. H is 6 to 6.5 after they've made coffee or espresso coffee. It's in a good organic matter source. It's a good nitrogen source. And so, and like I said, I was kind of using the smell as I'm sprinkling them on the salmon heads and rockfish carcasses and other stuff that I'm burying. So I'm kind of looking, some are with and some are without the coffee. So I'm going to see, keeping track of how much of a difference that makes. So that's kind of the new, one of the new experiments for this year and into next year.
Okay, so I guess one question I have is, how deeply are you burying these, fish parts in your garlic boxes, as far as then using those same boxes to plant things like kale and lettuce on top of that?
Yes. So the boxes are built out of 2x12 rough cut cedar, spruce, and I dig down, pretty close to the bottom of the box. So I'm down there 8 to 12 inches deep. Dig a trench across the box, throw in, there may be 6 or 8 salmon heads or 3 or 4 or 5 rockfish carcasses, whatever I have.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some small, I get them from one of the local processors here.
Mm.
And then on top of that, they get probably several cups of the coffee grounds. Again, I'm getting buckets and buckets of stuff from these places. And then the soil gets dumped back on top of that, and then they get covered. Eventually, the whole, when I get the other end of the box, then I'll cover the whole thing with plastic until, and that way that'll help the soil microorganisms will be working on that stuff, the worms and all. And then end of September, October, for the garlic at least, is when that will get started. So, and otherwise with, I mean, otherwise, stuff like kale, I mean, I just sprinkle the kale on the surface, run the rake across it, and stand back, and, a week from now, the kale will be out.
Right. Gotcha. So some of the boxes, you're just letting them kind of fertilize under plastic and just churn and do work on the soil. And in others, you're doing a couple of experiments. You're doing lettuce and kale, some of them with coffee over the fish and some without, to kind of measure the distance and, or the difference in how the crops up top are nourished by the fish, or is it more about smell, or?
By both the fish and the crops. And because, I mean, depending on which research you read, there are some places, well, even talk about coffee grounds being good to repel or poison slugs.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's an added benefit in my view. But there's some said that coffee grounds might serve as a seed germination inhibitor, which is good and bad. I mean, it might perhaps it would inhibit the growth of wheat seeds, but it might also inhibit the growth of the seeds that we want to plant, like that sort of thing. So I did that on two of the boxes, one with coffee, one without, where I planted the cover crop. That's a mixture of oats, field peas, fava beans, and veg. And it's up, that's up an inch, 1 to 2 inches already from just being planted 2 weeks ago. And I don't see any difference so far in those two boxes, one with coffee, one without. And that's in the surface layer.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. There might be more effect later on, but certainly they germinated quickly enough, side by side. And we luckily had, I kind of waited too for the rains to come, before I planted that, so that there was enough soil moisture. So, looks good so far.
Mm, sounds good.
I don't mind the smell of coffee. I'm not a coffee drinker personally. I guess that's sacrilegious to some. But the free coffee grounds, that's an offer that I can't pass on.
Yeah, that gives those noble beans one more contribution to our civilization.
sure.
Cool.
I don't know if it'll affect the flavor of the garlic next year or not. Well, I'll let you know.
Oh, that's exciting, though. Yeah, keep me posted on that one. That would be pretty interesting. It makes sense, though. The garlic spends a lot of time absorbing the essence of the soil there.
Right. we'll see how it goes. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that, yeah. See how it goes and how the flavor is and how big the garlic is.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that is exciting to start thinking about, and I'm sure everybody out there has lots to do this coming week and weekend in the gardens, and we'll check in again next week, and we'll leave it there for now. How does that sound?
All right. By then, we'll have a fresh apple pie.
Oof. That sounds mighty fine. We'll join you for that pie next week, and I'll let people send in an email with a question if you're out there and you're listening and you want to put some thought into a question and have me find the answer with the help of Master Gardener Ed Byarski. Shoot an email to the radio station. You can send it to me, orin@kfsk.org. Let's hear what you're wondering about for this season here in your garden. And with that, we'll let Ed get back to another great afternoon of hard work out there in the gardens where he is. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us, Ed.
Yep. Bye for now, Orin.
Okay, till next time. All right. Well, that was In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Byarski. And thanks so much for listening to that. Country music coming up next. Before we hand it over, we want to say a quick thank you to the Flower Farm for helping to underwrite In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Byarski. And they are going to be vending bouquets of their fresh-cut, locally grown flowers at the market on Saturday morning, this Saturday, 10 till 1 p.m. over at the John Hansen Senior Hall there on 1st Street, 10 a.m. till 1. And the Flower Farm also has begonia baskets, hydrangeas, geraniums in bloom. They're out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, every day, 10 till 5, except Wednesday. Stay tuned for some high country music coming up next.
Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew, you can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes.